Well, we made it to Wednesday.
Hard to believe.
Two more days to go. We also made it to 5 p.m. on Wednesday, so that's another good thing. Hi, folks. Time for American Hit Radio. 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College, kind enough to host us while we do what we do every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 p.m. I am the host, Tom Ryan, my lovely wife, co-host, engineer extraordinaire, Heidi Morales-Ryan here as well, and we're going to bring you an hour of American Hit Radio today. Now, I'm looking at where we are at, Heidi, in our countdowns, and we are moving along.
Trucking.
How many years have we been doing this thing now with these? Well, we've been moving our way through, just for if you're new to the show, two separate lists. One we're calling the Alternative Top 40. The other one we are calling the Top 500 of the Top 40. Each one consists of 500 albums. 500 albums on one list are our 500 favorites that did make the Top 40. The Alternative Top 40 is our 500 that did not make the Top 40. We're running through them chronologically. We started in January of 1964, where the list begins. We're going to count out 1,000 of them, which is to say, if we do this without too much pause or anything, it's going to take 20 years to complete.
Lucky but, yes.
Right? So you figure, that's a long time. I mean, I don't want to talk about how old I am and how, you know, where that's going to put me. I already know what I want to do when we run out of this theme, but that's another thing entirely.
Wow.
The thing is, like, I figured, okay, you know, we're lucky in the scope of things, just, you know, if we can get...
It's good to have plans.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
goals.
We are already up to album number 68 in the top 500 of the top 40. We've passed number 60. We just did number 60 last week in the alternative top 40 when we covered the Flying Burrito Brothers, actually 2 weeks ago. When we covered that. And so I'm like, yeah, we're definitely making some good progress here. We are, time-wise, chronologically, up to March 1969. And the album that we are going to cover, it's actually going to take us two shows to cover this album because it is a double album. I would
awesome.
Like to play it in its entirety. It's an album that you pretty much never hear on the radio, but it is part of our... Top 500 of the top 40 lists. The album is by, take a deep breath, prepare yourselves, the Bee Gees. Yeah, for real. No joke, for real. I'm doing that. I'm going there. Now, the Bee Gees, with this album, reached number 20 on the pop charts, which is why it counts as a top 40 album. But when it did get released, it was... seen as pretty much a failure by not only the Bee Gees themselves, but by the marketplace. Critics had a little bit of a weird difficulty with it. Even the band...
But that doesn't stop you.
Not at all. not at all. I discovered this album when I was younger, and I will admit that the first time that I played it, I thought it was awful. And as a little kid, when you spend money to buy a double album, I might tell the story later in the show, but it was not a cheap album. The original album came with a red velour or red felt cover. I've got it right here. Look at this. Red velour.
Velvet.
You'd see this in there. It's the way that they sold it. And you'd be like, wow, that's crazy. At the same time, it's like, you know, even the Beatles didn't do anything that crazy. And it was the time when all of a sudden everybody was making big statements. So it was the Bee Gees' turn. They were going to make this double album. And it all seemed like it was going to be somehow a theme album related to historical events. That's, I think, what they were going for. And they achieved it on many levels until they abandoned it. And that then left the rest of the album kind of piecemeal, which... is to say, you had to more or less wrap your head around what it ended up becoming. And to summarize what was really happening, you got to think of the Bee Gees in this regard. They started out with a very serious R&B influence. Songs like To Love Somebody, I Can't See Nobody, definitely showed that they had an interest. They were writing for Otis Redding. As crazy as it sounds, that was happening. That eventually began to morph into a deep psychedelic influence, which was fairly obvious as 67 turned into 68. And then by this point in time, they began to also develop a country western influence. So you've got R&B, country western, and psychedelic influences
all
competing at the exact same time. And keep in mind that all those influences are being filtered through the minds of Australian pop stars who have a very weird way of seeing things. And when you listen to the album, those influences take a very, very far back seat compared to the influence of orchestration and the orchestral influence. The band really sounded like they would have much rather have written a symphony than pop songs. And this album pretty much puts all of that in perspective, which is why it's a tough listen the first time you hear it. For example, the title of the album, Odessa, is the opening track. Here's what you're going to hear. This huge, swelling, crazy orchestra, and then really weird, haunting lyrics, which start out with a, Baba Black Sheep? You know, what is that doing in there? Totally weird. What they're trying to set up, though, as I hear it now, after 40 years of absorbing this, is the story of a husband and wife communicating with each other long distance. The husband is on a ship in the Odessa Sea, and he is literally caught in ice, and he's going to die. And he is writing his death letter to his wife in this song. Then there's another verse which sounds really carefree and simple, and it's essentially the wife, totally unaware of his predicament, writing a letter back to him, talking about the neighbor and the dog and how things are going around the town. And they set up this dichotomy in the song, and it takes a long time for this to unfold. But it becomes quite moving if you can have that much of an understanding of what is going on. At this point, I'll shut up and I'll let the 7-minute symphonic tune unfold itself. Here is the title track by the Bee Gees from the album Odessa.
Of your old flat, you love the vicar more than words can say. Tell him to pray that I won't melt away, and I'll see your face again. Odessa. treasure. You know the neighbors that live next door. They haven't got their dog anymore. Freezing, sailing around in the North Atlantic. Can't seem to leave the sea anymore. I just don't understand why you just moved to Finland. You love that finger more than words can say. Ask him to pray that I won't melt away and not see your face
accuse the Bee Gees of is understatement or subtlety. They go right for it. But obviously, you know, they're considering the subject matter, historic, somebody's death freezing on an iceberg after a shipwreck. You get that sense of ocean swells and distance.
And how old are these guys at this point?
How old are they?
Yeah.
Oh, let's see, I 23, 24 probably.
Okay. I mean, they just maybe always 21. Had like this, you know, huge sense of romanticism.
You know what? They were probably weren't even that old. I'm thinking that the brothers on the first album, I think they were 19 and 17 in 67. So they're probably 18 or 19, and Barry was maybe 21 or 22. Mm-hmm. So they're still very, very young. But, you know, their ambitions, obviously, it's this is what happens. Like when you, like being an Australian who finds yourself famous in England and in America, they were never anything else but an ambitious band for a pop band. And this album, what I found fascinating about it, the reason I didn't like it at first when I was a kid is because it is so difficult to figure out what's going on. This next song, I will now say this next song is probably one of my favorite songs in my life because I've heard it so often, and I just think it's got such a great feel to it. But the lyrics are weird. It's called You'll Never See My Face Again. And in the song, you get this sense that it could easily be about one person speaking to another person on a personal level about a broken vow. It could be about a couple breaking up, very much so, on a very simple level. But there's something about the lyrics that make it seem as though it's something much larger than that, like it's two world leaders who are basically coming to the conclusion that they are about to basically completely separate and go in completely opposite ways, perhaps to war. And it's really odd if you can write lyrics that basically suggest both of those things at the same time, whether it's personal or universal. But I think that they pretty much achieved it on this track. Tell me what you think. It's here it is. It's sung by Barry, You'll Never See My Face Again.
Every single word has been spoken. It's much too late to change the ways. Far too many vows have been broken. You can't expect a soul to stay. You think that you can stand and laugh? It makes me laugh. You got no friends. It took a thousand years to find out why. Never see my face again. You know that you've been left before this night. It's come my turn to make it over. I wish that everything was colored white. I wish that I could be a rover. You think that you can stand and laugh? It makes me laugh. You got no friends. It took a thousand years to find out why. You'll never see my face again. Every single word has been spoken. It's much too late to change the way it is. Far too many vows have been broken. You can't expect a soul to stay. You think that you can tell me less. It makes me laugh. You got no friends. took a thousand years to find out why. You'll never see my face again.
Now, you may think I'm a little bit crazy with that, but everything about this album seems to be bigger than it appears at first. Once you open up like the Red Velvet cover and you look inside, you see a picture of a ship with Navy sailors and officers throwing a child overboard to as the boat is sinking to a lifeboat, which... Like, wow, okay, so that's all seems to automatically be about some sort of incident, or if not an international incident, certainly something that's of global interest, not a personal thing. If you want to read into You'll Never See My Face Again the way that I hear it, put it this way. Later on the album, next week, we'll play it. There's a song called The Seven Seas Symphony. They play the international anthem, a song called With All Nations. In an orchestral version. There's another song called I Laugh in Your Face. The next lyric is, you're only one race. So it's, again, it's like, well, that's pretty obvious that that would be about some sort of, you know, national juxtaposition, something going on. But it just was much too confusing in its own time. And like I said, this album basically wreaked havoc on the band and their career. Like, basically, as I wrote for an introduction to the album, here you have the album that single-handedly killed phase one of the Bee Gees' career. At a time when overindulgence was the norm in 1969, Odessa was still just too much. Critics were unkind, the public dismissed it, and even the band came to loggerheads and ended up breaking up while trying to complete the project. It was the type of album that seemed to divide opinion into drastically divergent camps. Those who loved it, like me, and those who thought of it as a ridiculous mess. Most of the rest of the world. Time, however, has been incredibly kind to the album, I think. Somehow it managed to withstand the ignorance and the criticism, and the mystifying elements of the album's structure have only added to its now timeless appeal. Is it heavy or just bombastic? Are the lyrics profound, or are they just nonsense? The album continues to cause consternation, but it certainly isn't boring. That is why I want to feature this entire album in two shows. A big part of the fighting that was going on now was Barry, who was the oldest brother of the two twins, Robin and Morris, usually took charge. And he was doing so here again, but Robin... who had a number of hits. I Started a Joke was his, among a good deal of others. Holiday was his. And these songs ended up giving him some sense of saying that maybe I'm the star. I write the hit songs for this band. So he wanted to have this single. And it created a lot of problems when it was decided that he wasn't going to get the single. In fact, that's when he decided he waited till the project ended, but then he announced that he was quitting the band almost immediately upon its release. Here is not the single, but here's basically Robin also attempting to approach some sort of theme. I feel this has something to do with some sort of international theme with a track called Black Diamond.
Where are you? I love you. Where are you? I love you. Where are you to keep me warm? I had a dream. of a place far away. I follow a river where the dead man would play. And I'm leaving in the
That's completes side one with those three songs, and each of them anthemic in their own way, and obviously very open to interpretation. If you're a fan of the Bee Gees from like the disco era, this album must be really disconcerting. Like what is
that?
How
could that be the same band?
Yeah, it just seems, I mean, it really was like two completely different bands. Even for my standard, doing it in the other direction, because I had been a fan of the band since 1967. I was a kid that got into them on their first
letdown.
Yeah, their first international album. I loved it, and I was let down when they started doing the disco thing, because it just seemed like it was like, I don't want to say a sellout.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I'll say it for you.
If you're a commercial band, you more or less move wherever your muse takes you. But after an album like this, I went through a lot with this band to basically get to the point where this album became like one of the most important albums of my life. So if you get to that, and all of a sudden it seems like it almost broke them up, and all the problems that they
heart.
Went through. Yeah, it's like, oh, where are you going? I just wish that they would do something like this again. There was talk about them going back and revisiting this album live in the 80s or maybe even in the 90s. And that would have been amazing. Imagine the post-disco Bee Gees doing this album live. I would have been online for tickets, I promise you. That's for sure. Anyway, let me remind you, you're listening to 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College. The show is American Hit Radio. Heidi and I are here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 p.m. doing something on the order of what we're doing now. The album changes from show to show, but the basic theme doesn't on Wednesdays. I'd also like to mention the show by a very good friend of ours called Profumi d'Italia on Thursday at 5 p.m., our good friend Rita Monti brings you the best in Italian music and culture, along with poetry and interviews with Italian-American personalities. If you tune into our show, Rita, unlike me, is happy to take your phone calls and put you on the air, and and also takes requests on her live weekly program. So check out Rita Monti's Profumi di Italia. By the way, the reason I don't is simple. I come in here, I feel people with shows like Rita and people who have got these DJ shows or theme shows, they come in and they've got to have crates and crates and crates of records. I feel like, you know, if you're going to do a Beatles show or a Bruce Springsteen show or even a mixed show like Steve Mangiaracina does, you've got to be ready for requests. You've got to have a ton of stuff. So you every day when you come to the radio station, it's like you're moving in and then you're moving out. I come here with one CD. It's very simple. I know exactly what I'm going to play. I can't take requests because it would only disrupt from the format that I have planned out for myself for that day. And although I am absolutely always happy to take calls from listeners, I just don't take the calls on air, because generally the format of what I'm playing has specific things to do with what I want to talk about. And it's very difficult to stay exclusively on topic without at least being able to always screen the call. And we don't have that opportunity to do that here. So that being said, I know we've got a lot of listeners who do like to call the show from time to time. I love it when you do. I always love it when people call. For the main reason, it lets me know that you're listening. And I also get to know what you're thinking, you know, whether you like it, whether you don't like it, or at least that you care enough to let me know one way or the other. So that's always welcome. Feel free to call us here at the station whenever you like. By the way, that's 516-572-7440.
Wait till we are playing a song.
Yeah, that would work. Now, I mentioned that there was sort of a country influence that was coming into the band at around this time, and I think this next song kind of captures that. It's mostly a Barry song. It has nothing to do with this universal theme thing. You can tell that after side one, things changed drastically.
They abandoned the theme.
Well, they returned to it pretty heavily on parts of side three and side four, I feel. With, like I said, I Laugh in Your Face and Never Say Never Again, Seven Seas Symphony. We'll do that next week. But here's it's a country song, but it's another weird song. It's about a guy who sounds like he's got too many kids. Until at the end, it turns out that he's basically got like a whole, like, what is it? Like a charity house full of children.
No.
Like, what's going on?
An orphanage,
yeah. It's like, okay, he goes from basically taking care of his wife and taking the kids for a drive to all of a sudden he's basically running an orphanage. It's a strange, strange song. But it's the song that actually was the first one that I got when I was a kid. I heard this and I'm like, okay, all's well. I still really like the Bee Gees. It's called, I don't even know why, I guess after the address of where this residence is, Marley Pert Drive.
Sand. 10 miles empty quarters. I was 'cause I'm feeling any more alive. 'Cause with 15 kids and a family on the skids, I gotta go for a Sunday drive. 15 kids and a family on the skids, I gotta go for a Sunday drive. I used to be a minstrel free, with a whole lot of bread in my bag. I used to feel that my life was real, but the good Lord threw me a snag. Now I'm gonna be the same as me, no matter how I try. 'Cause with 15 kids and a family on the skids, I gotta go for a Sunday drive. 15 kids and a family on the skids, I gotta go for a Sunday drive. Turn round the car and hit it for, I guess I realize my fate. 10 miles empty, quarter small, I pulled up outside the gate. 20 more kids were stood inside, and that made 35. 'Cause with an orphanage full of 35 kids, I gotta go for a Sunday drive. An orphanage full of 35 kids, I gotta go for a Sunday drive. Sunday morning, woke up yawning, filled the pool for a swim. Pulled down the glass and looked in the mirror just to see if I was in. Went up the stairs and kissed my woman to make her come alive. 'Cause with an orphanage full of 35 kids, I gotta go for a Sunday drive. An orphanage full of 35 kids, I gotta go for a Sunday drive.
I have a strange idea of what I consider to be an entertaining song, don't I?
Yes. Sorry, kids, we're going for a one-way ride.
Yeah, you could. I didn't. In all the, I never heard it that way. But yeah, what if he's taking his kids to the orphanage? He's like regretting the fact that he didn't have like him, that he's no longer a single guy with a whole lot of bread in his bag and all that, as he says. Well, rather interesting. It's called Marley Pert Drive. We're playing the Bee Gees' Odessa album in its entirety. This is their fourth album after they, not counting the one that they released when they were children in Australia, that really never saw the light of day until they became super famous. And then they started issuing various packages of that earlier material, which is usually, you think this is startling. If you're a Bee Gees fan, you should hear some of that stuff. It's like, what? Really? Some of it is pre-puberty.
Hmm.
They are literally
their
like...
Their voices
like,
hadn't cracked yet.
Yeah, they're maybe 9 years old on some of that some of that stuff from Australia. The albums, as they came out here, were Bee Gees First, which I think is an amazing classic album. We covered that already in the past. The Horizontal album was second. We covered that as well. That was a very interesting psychedelic album. That was followed by Idea, an album that I liked very much at the time. I don't know if it aged that well. And then, of course, this album, Odessa, the album that more or less crushed the band. You're going to, like I said, the thing about this album is its crazy diversity. After all that orchestral heaviosity of side one, side two suddenly becomes a lot lighter and weirder, even weirder. Marley Pert Drive just sets it up. This next song is a rather interesting study about Thomas Edison, called simply Edison.
Ah, 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 ah.
lights to read. He gave us light of day. He gave us cylinders to please when Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. Edison set the world on fire. He really made their day. Station to station, many wires. Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. Oh, how, look at us now. We still got a lot to learn. But it's someone else's turn. Edison's here to stay. Edison's here to stay. All of the world can taste this glory. All of the people say, you be the man to write his story. Edison's here to stay. Edison's here to stay. Oh, how, look at us now. We've still got a lot to learn. But it's someone else's turn. Edison's here to stay. Edison's here to stay. He made electric lights to read. He gave us light today. He gave us cylinders to please. When Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. You'll be the man to write his story. Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. All of the world can hear his story. Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay. Edison came to stay.
That song brings to mind a couple of coincidences and a very interesting fun fact that Heidi and I were just talking about while I was playing. We have a summer house in western Massachusetts in the Berkshires in a town called Great Barrington. And one of the things that we had learned about the history of that town is that Great Barrington was apparently the very first town in the entire United States to have ever been lit up.
Electrified.
Edison apparently went to Great Barrington and strung the town with lights and had a power system and threw the switch that lit up Great Barrington. For the first time anywhere, a town was lit up with electricity. That's stunning to me to think that happened in a little town in Massachusetts that I had known from summer vacations and such. But it's, if I remember correctly, also at that time, Edison was a proponent of DC current, and the town was lit up with DC current, not AC current. And this whole thing started about which one was better. I think Edison liked DC. He thought it was safer. But that was part of the argument. And eventually AC, as we all know, won out.
Yes.
That's what the world runs on now, is alternating current, not direct current. But considering that the Bee Gees wrote the song Edison, and this is about a town in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I also think it's funny that one of the Bee Gees' biggest hit singles before this album was called The Lights Went Out in Massachusetts. Just strange coincidence, perhaps.
Is it coincidence?
Yeah. Who knows? Okay, well, right now, the next up, I think this is just quite simply one of the prettiest songs on the album, of just like a beautiful song with a fabulous melody. More typical Bee Gees, much easier, I think, for typical Bee Gees fans to love this song. It's called Melody Fair.
Crying face. knows that life is a running race. Her face shouldn't show any signs.
Melody Fair, won't you comb your hair? You can be beautiful too. Just like a merry-go-round.
Melody Fair, won't you comb your hair? You can be beautiful too.
Life is a running race. Her face shouldn't show any
felt that that song should have been the single. It just seems to me so classic Bee Gees in terms of, like, it's got a soaring melody, it's uplifting, it's not totally, like, confusing in terms of what its theme is. It's fairly straightforward and well-performed. And I just thought it was like, that was like a nice little...
good harmonies.
Yeah, exactly. It's tied up in a nice, neat little bow, and it sounds like the band, you know? Like the same band that did "Got to Get a Message to You," that's them. You can tell that, but you can see like the weirdness on the album, how things are beginning to change. Like, for example, I talked already about the warring factions that were developing between Barry and Robin. Now, Robin's twin brother Morris was always the quiet BG, the one that we heard the least from. He was usually on stage. He would play bass. Didn't sing nearly as much as his other two brothers, didn't write nearly as much, was one of the three, very much one of the three. But his input was usually severely limited. And sometimes I understand why, because he writes some stuff that's a little bit like just not as huge in scope as what his brothers would do. Certainly not as dramatic or as overstated. His stuff was usually incredibly understated. Sometimes it worked very much in his favor. Other times it was just sort of like, eh. You can decide where you think this song lies. Definitely one of Morris's songs. It's called "Suddenly."
Suddenly. tell by looking at me? How can you tell you like what you see? Suddenly there's a boy in the rain alone. Suddenly there's a girl in the rain alone. Oh yeah. How can you tell humans are real? How can you tell you like what you feel? Suddenly there's a girl in your heart, oh boy. Suddenly there's a boy in your heart, oh boy. Tell by looking at me. How can you tell you like what you see? Suddenly there's a boy in the rain alone. Suddenly there's a girl in the rain.
Even a song as simple as that, crazy orchestration, 1,000 different things happening all over the place.
I guess the record company really loved them.
Yeah, they got what they wanted. Well, Robert Stigwood, who was managing them and basically handling all the production, spared no expense with making sure that they had the backing musicians that they wanted. And that meant if they wanted a full chorus and a full orchestra, they got it. And I think it was basically to the benefit of history. You know, I'm sure it was expensive, but it wouldn't be this show playing the Bee Gees' Odessa album if it didn't end on a very weird note. We're going to come back next week and play part two of this album, which I think might be a little bit less weird, but it's still a weird, going to be, it's still partly weird. But this last song on side two is totally strange. This is one of the songs I actually learned to play drums to before I took drum lessons. I remember picking up sticks and trying to play along to this one because it was fun. I guess it's a song about an illegal sort of a illicit backdoor trading thing going on, maybe. It's called Whisper, Whisper. We'll leave you with that and we'll see you hopefully on Friday, if not next Wednesday. Take care, everybody.
Whisper, what have you got? I've got doesn't matter what your name is, I can do a million things to you. No explanations, sexual patience, both of the nations doing it too.